Welcome back to the Medical Illustration Podcast. This is your host, Paul Kelly, and I'm so excited to talk to you today about all that's been happening recently in the field of medical illustration. I just felt the need to get back on the mic and share some of the recent news for the summer of 2023. And since you last heard from me, I have become a father. It's been super hectic, of course, but really awesome. You know, I've learned quite a bit about pregnancy, labor and delivery, and early childhood development. I knew, you know, I have a little bit of a foot in the door in that department with having, been working at TVA Surge for many years now and worked on and reviewed and learned about OB-GYN as a surgical discipline, but then also having helped raise six nieces and nephews. So I've been really looking forward to this for a long time. It's amazing. It's awesome. So yeah, you know, I've been reading into it, you know, getting all this new information, gaining hands-on experience. It's been great. And so I definitely want to be bringing on some experts in the near future to touch on some of these topics, you know, like OB-GYN, labor delivery, and pediatrics concerns from a medical illustration perspective. So keep an eye out for that. I'm definitely going to make that happen. Now, for this episode of the podcast, I'm going to talk about some news happening in the field. I want to touch on the upcoming AMI conference, of course, and some other organizations, and then also talk about the pillars of our field. You know, I'll touch on some news in art, science, business, and technology. So let's jump right in. The 2023 AMI conference is coming up, the Association of Medical Illustrators. Registration is still open for the 77th annual AMI conference, which will be taking place in Henderson, Nevada, just outside of Vegas, on July 19th through the 22nd at the Hilton Lake Las Vegas Resort. Program overview, I want to touch on some of the highlights from the conference. The keynote speaker at this year's conference is none other than Temple Grandin, who is a person I've known about and admired for quite some time, actually. So I'm super bummed I'm going to be missing out, you know, on this year's conference. Unfortunately, I can't make it, but I'm going to take this opportunity to share a little bit of her story because she is an amazing individual. I first learned about Dr. Grandin in the book Mastery by Robert Greene, and he gives sort of a great little short biography on her life. So here's a summary of that short biography he wrote. Struggling with language development, Temple was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. She benefited from speech therapy, but as a visual thinker, she faced many challenges in a school system that was geared heavily towards verbal learning. And she was picked on, bullied, teased a lot. But she found refuge in working with her hands and developing kinship with animals. And she showed early aptitude in both of these areas and quickly became an expert in horseback riding and in cattle husbandry. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. When she was visiting an aunt who had a cattle ranch in Arizona, she became obsessed with this device they had that they used to calm down the cattle when they had to give them shots. And it's called a squeeze chute, I believe. And she like just thought this was the coolest looking device. She wanted to actually be put into it herself, and she became obsessed with researching the she found that she loved the sensation of being like almost tightly held. She would later find that this is a common occurrence with people with autism, is this sensation is really relieving for them. It brings relief. So she became obsessed with researching the beneficial effects of touch on young children with autism. And so now, driven as she was, she used this superhuman ability she had to focus. This was, you know, the upside to her autistic side. And she would read for like long periods of time. And she dove into these science books and taught herself enough to be admitted to Arizona State University, where she pursued a master's in animal sciences. If you want to learn more about her story, she's also given TED Talks that I've seen. They're awesome. So I'll be sure to link to one of those in the show notes. Dr. Grandin's lecture will highlight her landmark work revealed in her most recent book, Visual Thinking, which celebrates and advocates for the special minds and contributions of visual thinkers. Grandin proposes new approaches to educating, parenting, employing, and collaborating with visual thinkers. So I really hope there's going to be a recording of this talk that we can check out after the conference. But man, the AMI, they've done such a great job with the program for this year's conference, because another speaker of note in this program, I mean, this is like celebrity status all over again. Mary Roach, the author of Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. She's also written Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, Packing for Mars, and other great science-themed books. She's a prolific author, really well-known. And so from the AMI program, here's a short quote about her. As a popular science expert, she draws audiences into the hilarious anecdotes, mind-blowing facts, and unknown realities of the relationship between humans and space, wildlife, death, and more. This sounds like it's going to be an amazing talk. I think that's going to be so cool. Some more of the big headlines from the conference. Bob Morial from the Mayo Clinic will give a talk on the growing value of extended reality, XR, and simulation-based learning in healthcare and medical education. Well, that's definitely going to be worth checking out. Bob Morial is old school. He's been around for quite some time, and I think he's the high-ranking medical illustrators at Mayo Clinic and has been for quite some time. So that'll be really cool. Another talk we have here, Christian Hansen will present 3D printing for realistic anatomical models. He will discuss the techniques to produce high-end digital sculpts, as well as the factors he considers to maintain anatomical accuracy, minimize complexity, and maximize realism. I've done a little 3D printing myself, and I can definitely tell you there's a lot of variables that come into that part of the process. It's a little bit of a departure from your standard knowledge base in 3D modeling digitally within a computer software such as ZBrush or, you know, Cinema 4D, Maya, any of these softwares. When you're designing specifically for 3D printing, you have to take all kinds of things into account, like where the support's going to go, how thick do these walls need to be in different areas. It's a whole different game. So that's definitely going to be a good talk worth checking out. Katie Allen will present Quality versus Quantity, Delivering Your Best Work in a High Volume Environment. I mean, we all have to know how to produce high volumes of work. I think in this field, it's just sort of a given that you've got to be prepared and able to do that. It's definitely important. So that'll be good. Annie Goff, I previously interviewed her with the LearnMedical.Art podcast. It was a great interview. That was a lot of fun. As I've also mentioned, she has an incredible book that's out. So definitely check that out. She's going to be presenting a med legal case regarding a skin tag removal that turned into an internal hemorrhoid stapling. That sounds awful. She will also show the final trial exhibit slide deck that she made and discuss a unique and successful collaboration. Well, that'll be cool. All right. BMC professors Mark Dreyer and Nick Woolridge will present on forensic facial reconstruction. Now, this is work I know Mark has been involved with for many years, so this would be really cool to see him give an update on what he's been doing with all this. And so Nick's been involved, too. That's awesome. The Tech Showcase for this year is going to feature 3D animation pipeline efficiency with Michael Hickman of Barrow Neurological Institute, who, of course, you know, is one of my former guests. He's going to be writing custom scripts for... Oh, sorry, this is a different talk. Writing custom scripts for Photoshop and Illustrator. Of course, this is from the woman who schooled me on Photoshop, Professor Carol Horesa from the UIC program. What's up, Carol? And then we have animated GIFs with Levant F. Levant's a great guy, man. He's been doing a lot of outreach in Turkey. I think he's based in Australia, but he's got like international collaboration going on. And he's doing amazing stuff. Using Figma for scientific visualization with Amy Zhang. What's up, Amy? And Shay Saharan, who recently became a professor at BMC. Congratulations, Shay. That's awesome. Molecular Maya updates with Gail McGill, another former guest, and Jonathan Cow. That is just so impressive to me. They're just like constantly. I don't think Molecular Maya has ever not been updated like at every single AMI meeting. It's pretty much a running update every year. And a Photoshop open mic session with Sarah Ferris. That's a great idea. I think that's great, man. So many people in the field use Photoshop. Even if that's not like your main tool, you're still using it all the time. Let's see here. Okay, so we have some updates to the way the salon works at the AMI, and I thought this was definitely worth sharing on the podcast. We submitted some pieces from TVA Surge. We do every year, and so I'm really well-versed in the application process, or the submission process for the AMI salon. The Salon is the annual exhibition of medical art, which is created and produced by members of the Association of Medical Illustrators, displayed at the site of the annual conference every year. So it's physically there in person. You can walk through the setup of all the art on the wall. It's amazing. It's a gallery, basically, show every single year. But then the work also goes on the website. You can check that out after every single conference. And awards are given out, you know, for the most recent achievements in medical visualization. So some of the changes they've made to the Salon application process, they now have they have different kinds of awards they give out. They give awards of excellence, award of merit. They have a new award, which is a social impact award. This is a new optional cross-category award, which has been created for entries that address social injustices and challenges not limited to race, age, body type, and disability. Entrants may choose to be considered for this award and provide a social impact statement up to 1,000 characters. This is separate from the intended purpose statement, which is required. So this is something they've also done now. They have new medical legal categories, which have been expanded to better reflect the types of work in that area. So for a long time now, just so you know, they have medical legal illustrations, animations, and interactive pieces that are submitted to the Salon. They now are getting more granular with the distinctions. So they have plaintiff versus defense, and they have both personal injury or medical malpractice categories. So this now expands the categories under which awards will be given out, which is amazing. That's awesome. And it's also acknowledging and highlighting the expansion of the medical legal niche portion of our industry. That's awesome. And so they also have added a Fine Arts Award into the AMI Salon. This is meant to showcase members' work. No awards will be given out in this category, but I think that's still awesome that they included it, because there's a lot of people who just casually are constantly creating artwork all the time, because this is just kind of like, this is how our brains work, and we just have to like create. All right, so that's cool. And then the last thing I wanted to mention about the AMI conference is that I've been seeing here on the social media that Brandon Plesch, who's the former president of Radius Digital Science before it was acquired by Real Chemistry, and then Cameron Sladen, CEO at Microverse Studios, have both been promoting a quote-unquote terrible medical illustration art competition. So if you have any horrible medical illustrations that you are not at all proud of, there's a place for them now. So the submission deadline for this year is July 13th, and then there's going to be awards given out on July 20th at the Henderson, Nevada AMI conference. So for more info on this, if you want to participate, I don't know if this is going to be a recurring event. They even kind of joke about that in their promotion images for it. But if you want to get involved, check it out. Shoot them an email at medillus. dogshow@gmail.com. Now there are some other non-conference related AMI news I wanted to share. So recently there was an AMI biomedical 3D animation Zoom get together hosted by Michael Hickman. This was a great idea, and I jumped on that call, and there was it was a nice little crowd of people, and some good names in there from the different sectors of where medical animation touches different industries. And we were discussing 3D workflows, project management and scheduling concerns, software and hardware issues, art style. And we all shared some ideas about what we'd like to see our tools do, and so think about, just what would our wish list be of features. Yeah, it was, it was really great to see a lot of folks there. I also wanted to give a special shout out to Eddie Schwan from Axis Studio. He's the X of the AXS Studio. And Eddie was a professor at BMC. I got to learn under him, and he was an absolutely brilliant individual. And it's really awesome to learn from. And yeah, he's been, co-running Axis for the past few years. So that's what he's been up to. But he had some great stuff to share. And on that note, I should also pause for a minute here and give a shout out to our conference sponsors, of which included Axis Studio in Toronto, also Artery Studio, Barrow Neurological Institute, Maxon, Microverse, Red Nucleus, and Vessel Studios. So a big shout out and thank you to each of those companies for continuing to sponsor the AMI and keep our community alive. So big thanks to them. Also, Jill Gregory, the current AMI president, recently put out an update on her activities on the AMI hub, and this was really cool. This was just an update to the organization, let her know what she's been doing in her role as the AMI president. And a lot of it included a lot of outreach to sister organizations. Now, hold on, sorry. Before I go any further, I just have to say happy birthday, Jill. She just celebrated a birthday, so I just wanted to include that in the message there. Now, Jill, one of the first and most interesting meetings that she brought up and mentioned, so she went to the American Association for Anatomy, or AAA, conference in March in Washington, D.C., and she had some really cool pictures to share and a couple anecdotes. And she mentioned that next year's conference is going to be held in Toronto, hometown. And this particular conference is going to have a focus on visualization. So this is like, come on, man. If you're a Toronto medical illustrator and you're listening to this podcast, you gotta come to that, man. Come on. You got plenty of heads up notice. Come on. You got to show up for this. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be a party, dude. It's going to be so much fun. Jill has been involved with several other outreach programs I also wanted to mention, which includes the master's students at the University of Dundee in Scotland, the Institute of Medical Illustrators, which is the organization based in the UK, who, I think I have some more news about them in a minute. Great organization. The Biomedical Visualization and Communication Certificate Program at the University of British Columbia, which is exciting to hear about. I know that that program is still in development, and they are seeking to become like a fully fledged, new graduate program for the field, which is going to be really amazing because there are so many folks from the West Coast who they have to make like a huge life change and move out east in order to like study this stuff, because that's where like all the schools are, right? So having a new option on the West Coast of North America, so many people would be super happy about that. And I think it would just be good for everyone. It would be incredible, especially at University of British Columbia. I've been able to travel there. And let me tell you, if everyone in the field had an excuse to occasionally go visit that program out at UBC, it would be like a guaranteed little mini vacation for everybody. Because let me tell you, that campus is gorgeous. It is amazing. They have their own little like forest preserve there. They have a museum on campus. They have a beach. They have a private beach for the university. Like, come on, like that's like your buddy. You want to go visit them? Like, let's help them out. So there's also this science and art student group at RIT that Jill reached out to. Also, the undergraduate art majors at St. Olaf College in Minnesota, one of the undergrad programs for our field. All right. Awesome. And to an undergraduate pre-medical illustration course at Brown University in Rhode Island. Rhode Island on the come up. Excellent. Love it. So that's some of what Jill's been up to. I think she's been doing a fantastic job. And she also mentioned a couple opportunities that I wanted to pass along here. These are paid opportunities for the field. Now, earlier I had mentioned the new social impact categories in the AMI salon. This is also an extension of the AMI's efforts to become more involved with promoting diversity, inclusiveness, equity in our field and in the way that we represent our work. Now, at the last meeting, we had a talk by Dr. Melissa Carroll, who is the founder of Black in Anatomy. Dr. Carroll had been working for several years to launch a new project called Pop Art, portfolios of people advancing anatomical representation together. And they are just now launching their first call for illustrations for the project, which is funded by the American Association for Anatomy, AAA, who I just mentioned. So this is to diversify the pool of medical illustrations available to anatomy educators. It will be an online repository of diverse illustrations for educators to use in formal educational settings. Participating illustrators can be paid both for pre-existing illustrations and for newly commissioned works based on reference photography provided by the project. This is an amazing opportunity. So the deadline for the first application is July 10th of 2023, which means I definitely got to get this podcast out before then. But also, if you need more information, you can email them directly at pop_aart@anatomy.org. So please do reach out. I think that's an amazing opportunity for everyone. Now, interestingly enough, the AMI has also announced today, when I'm recording this, they've announced another similar initiative. This one is funded by Johnson & Johnson. This is the AMI Diversity Fellowship Program for members and non-members of the AMI to take part in. Made possible by a grant through Johnson & Johnson's Our Race to Health Equity Initiative, the AMI Diversity Fellowship will seed the creation of a new digital library to expand the depiction of racial and ethnic diversity in medical illustrations. You can learn more about this fellowship and apply by visiting the AMI.org website and going to the Professional Resources tab. So, yet another opportunity to contribute to a positive social cause in the world of medical and scientific illustration and get paid doing so. That's awesome. Now, another internship opportunity. So, you know, I want to try and start getting better at mentioning these. In the past, I haven't made as many announcements like these because I'm worried about when the podcast actually does come out. I just want to make sure that it's going to be timely. But as long as I can do that, you know what, I'm going to try and start doing more of these announce opportunities because I know there are a lot of people who are hungry for internships. So without further ado, SciAM, Scientific American, is looking for a graphics intern. This position pays $20 per hour and is full-time, up to 35 hours, for 3 to 4 months during the fall of 2023. So this is coming up. The position is located in their New York office, NYC, on a hybrid working model. Applicants must have command over the basics of medical and scientific image making, right? You have to be able to do the job. But if you have a strong interest in science, health, environment, and technology, and you understand the basic cores, fundamentals of good image making, you should apply for this internship. Applicants must have an undergraduate degree in a scientific discipline is preferred but not required. I'll provide a link in the show notes, or you can search internship at Scientific American and you should find it. You know, apply by July 10th with your cover letter, resume, and a portfolio link. And by the way, they say they will weigh the cover letter heavily. I have to wonder if that means they're going to judge it based on whether they think ChatGPT wrote it or if you actually wrote it yourself. I don't know. This is just me speculating, but I wonder if that's what they meant. But for sure, like, write it yourself. Definitely write it yourself. Be genuine, you know, and convey your passion for the field. All right, a few more conferences. I can't have this only be AMI-centric. I also want to mention some of the other conference opportunities that are happening in the near future. The Biocommunications Association, BCA, they still have their image portal open for bioimage. Oh, sorry. No, it hasn't opened yet, I don't think. For bioimages, which is their version of the salon. I think it opens on July 23rd, so you've got plenty of time. The Biocom 2023 conference was already held in May the 16th through the 19th at the Drury Plaza Hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I will try to make sure I know when their next conference is happening in 2024 and get you guys a notification of that prior to when it's happening so you can check it out. The Biocommunications Association has been traditionally more focused on medical and scientific photography, but they also display illustrations in their bioimages competition. And so, hey, if you've got some strong work and you want to start collecting accolades to promote yourself, this is a great opportunity to do so. So check them out. And as mentioned, the Institute of Medical Illustrators, based in the UK, their conference is in November, the 10th through the 11th, open for presentation submissions still currently, I believe, through June 30th. So if you have something you want to present, hit them up. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to be a virtual conference or a hybrid model or what, but I suspect it might be. So again, if you're looking to pad your CV, I'd say give it a look and see if you want to join them. I did a presentation with IMI last year. I think it was in the fall, but it was sort of like a one-off kind of thing. It wasn't part of their conference per se. I think it was like a different event they were holding. But anyway, it was a lot of fun, great group of folks. Highly recommend you check them out, especially if you're based in the UK. So that, you know, that kind of does a lot of the business sort of portion of the field that I wanted to get through. I mean, that was a lot right there. Before I wrap up this podcast, though, I did want to, you know, give it a shot and touch on some other topics that are sort of recent events for me and which are very pertinent to the field of medical illustration. So I want to talk a little bit about some of my fine art activities and then talk a little bit about some scientific topics. So I hope you guys will stick with me here. So let's first talk about the art. My fine art sort of recent news I wanted to share was I recently completed about 4 months or so of the Watts Atelier online drawing program. This is a like an online fine arts program. They have like hundreds of hours of video tutorials on life drawing and painting using traditional media. The drawing program is very much geared to prepare students to become painters, I kind of feel. And so, you know, like Jeff Watts, the founder, is very much like a passion oil painter. But you can tell he also loves classical drawing and he just loves illustration. And I also, again, like this is a depicting the human form focused like art line of art study. They're all about like drawing people, portraits, figure drawing, illustration of the nude and clothed human form. This guy, Jeff Watts, man, he is pretty charismatic, I have to say. He's a really highly skilled artist. He's crazy good. He's got a great YouTube channel, so check him out. I mean, just look at some of his videos, and you can see like what level this guy's at. I mean, he's pretty amazing. So I definitely wanted to learn from this guy. I was originally recommended to check him out by a fellow BMC alum, and I was at this like every single day at the beginning of 2023. I definitely think if I had known about this before I enrolled in the grad program at Toronto, I would have signed up for and gotten like way deeper into this. It's a really methodical approach to figure drawing that gives you consistently high quality results. It really does. And it teaches you a reliable strategy for drawing the human body and face. Yeah, the more familiar you become with their system, it definitely, I could feel it, man. It increases your drawing speed and accuracy. I can personally attest to that. So yeah, after I did a couple months, I decided I was going to shift gears and play around with some other stuff, but I definitely recommend it. It was absolutely fantastic instruction, so definitely worth checking out. All right, so I want to jump over into some science news topics. Over the past year or so, I've heard some news of new teaching appointments in the medical illustration training programs here in North America. And I wanted to start off with these because this is very much related to the education programs. So Cameron Sladen and Amami Elizabeth Antia Obong have joined the faculty at the UIC program in Chicago. And we also have some new profs at the BMC program in Toronto. Shay Saharan, Peter Lanes, Stephen Mater, and Nancy G. That's amazing. I think they've come on to the faculty at a few different points in the past. And by the way, these are part-time assignments. Just have not seen those updates. I apologize for that. But I just wanted to say congratulations to all these folks for starting their new journey into teaching, and congratulations to all their future students who will undoubtedly benefit from their tutelage. I'm familiar with the work and careers of each of these people, and I can personally confirm their qualifications as being top-notch, absolutely top-notch. Prolific medical illustration professionals, these highly skilled folks. I mean, they really are the best people to be brought in for teaching. I'm sure I've missed some folks. I really apologize. I'm sure I have, but I, you know, wanted to give these shout outs anyway, just to get started on trying to make this a regular habit, you know, a regular feature of the podcast. Whenever there's new appointments, I definitely need to get those announced. I mean, there's just so many interesting people in our field. It's really hard to narrow down anyone to give that MVP status to, you know, the shout outs in the episodes. But I mean, the professors who teach medical and scientific illustration in all the various undergrad and graduate programs are a pretty good place to start, because let me tell you have to be fairly familiar with the field and pretty skilled to be able to teach, right? So I want to start getting in the habit of making these shout outs. So congrats again to all those folks, and we'll make sure to get any new appointments mentioned in the future. Now, okay, let's get into some science. I wanted to touch base on a little area I've been researching and some of the things that have been happening locally with me. I've been currently working on a patient education project, and I don't know if I've ever really gotten this deep into patient ed before, but let me tell you, it is a whole area of study and knowledge. It's really quite a lot to learn, in addition to, you know, the learning new things about anatomy and medical topics. The way in which this stuff is communicated is also really important for patients. So one of the things I looked into, I started looking at student projects on patient ed, to be honest. I just jumped right into like recent grads who I knew did patient education projects, and I looked up their master's research projects and combed through their references and citations, and that gave me, you know, my footing on getting my basic knowledge base established for patient ed projects. And so one of them I found that I thought was really interesting, really good, was the IPDAS, or International Patient Decision Aid Standards. To be honest, their site is a bit old, is a little clunky, but I found a link there to their original 74-item list of standards that was compiled about 20 years ago. So that was great. And it's since been refined. The most recent version has been edited down to just 47 items. And then they also changed from a binary, you know, has, doesn't have rating system to a sliding scale measure. So for like a couple examples of like the criteria this system is teaching you to evaluate work with and see if this patient decision aid. Does this describe the health condition and treatment options, including the benefits and the risk of each option? Does these are the criteria that the IPDAS is having you look for. Does this provide information to support the communication between patients and healthcare providers? I thought that was really important and an interesting way of thinking about this differently. Like this visual asset that you're creating for a patient education effective piece, it has to be kind of like a catalyst for communication between the patient and the healthcare provider. That's a great way to think of it. They explicitly say, you know, a good patient decision aid will have visual components to it. They definitely include that, but also plain language, the way in which we phrase things. I think trying to steer away from too much of that heavy medical jargon is definitely what they are encouraging. And then, you know, this has to provide information about the experiences of others who have faced similar decisions. This is really interesting because that means that, like, for most patient education projects, you almost kind of have to run a study just to, like, make a thing. Yeah, seriously, because that you have to, you know, at least do, like, an informal interview with, like, potential target audience individuals, right? And get some idea of, like, what they need to see, what do they need to know, how are they going to interpret this? You know, it's important. And I got to give a shout out here to Michael Konomos from Emory University, who was nice enough to share some resources on the AMI Hub for patient education research, and which included Richard Mayer's seminal book, Multimedia Learning. This details his extensive research on how to structure multimedia materials effectively to maximize learning. So this is actually evidence-based universal principles for effective communication, not necessarily specific for patient education pieces, but it definitely applies. I had mentioned the IPDAS. There is also other kind of like assessment tools, which would include the Patient Education Materials Assessment Tool, PEMAT, the PMAT. This is a systematic method to evaluate and compare the understandability and actionability of patient education materials. We also have the SAM, the Suitability Assessment of Materials Instrument, which offers a systematic method to objectively assess the suitability of health information materials for a particular audience in a short time. And lastly, I'll mention the Health Literacy Online, which Michael was saying has some good advice. So these are some of the resources I've been digging into and utilizing for my current project. If you have any recommendations for tools to evaluate and design effective patient education materials, please share them. Shoot me a comment or an email. Help me out. Yeah, throw me a life preserver or something. Okay, so next in the science news, I wanted to mention a local milestone here in Toronto. This was achieved recently by the Ajmera Transplant Program at the Toronto General Hospital. They recently announced they completed their 3,000th lung transplant. That is incredible. That is so cool, man. That's awesome. This is really up to, you know, individuals like me to announce, I have to be honest, because these guys are too humble. They don't spread news like this too far and wide. It's just, there was just like, you know, an internal email. I'm like, why aren't you guys like blowing up social media with this? So I have to brag for them, okay? This is awesome. This is incredible. This takes the contributions from so many people too, by the way. I mean, the surgeons and OR staff, of course. Keep in mind that OR nurses are also specialized for transplant. It takes specific training. So major props to them. But also you have all the folks involved in transplant research. You have to be doing research in transplantation. You need quite a number of lab workers involved. And these people are situated physically right alongside surgeons, like just down the hall in the OR corridor. You know, when we go into film surgeries, we pass by some of the dedicated ORs at TGH. Like there's one that has the ex vivo lung perfusion set up. They have an ex vivo liver and ex vivo kidney perfusion systems as well. So this is really amazing to be at an institution such as UHN, University Health Network here in Toronto, where I get exposed to this stuff. So a big congratulations to everyone involved in reaching this milestone. That's awesome. All right, and now I want to jump over to a couple business topics for you, and we're gonna wrap the episode up with that. One of which is the recent changes to the website Reddit. Okay, so Reddit, for those of you who've been listening to this podcast over the past, you may know that I'm involved. I have an affinity for the website Reddit, and I also am involved. I'm a moderator on the Medical Illustration subreddit. But there's been quite a buzz lately. Well, to more accurately, negative backlash, probably be a more fitting term here, in regards to a recent policy change the administration of Reddit has made regarding their API. Now, I'm not a programmer. I don't fully understand this stuff, to be honest, but my understanding is that like an API, application programming interface is what the acronym stands for. It's kind of like a coding package that allows someone to redesign a website or a plugin or basically be able to adapt it for a new format. And like Reddit has historically made their API freely available so that third-party developers can make like mobile app versions of the site, because the site doesn't like translate well in mobile and stuff. So like, for example, Apollo, that's the Reddit app I use. But recently Reddit announced they're going to start charging developers to have access to the API, which means most, if not all, of these apps will probably no longer be available, because it seems like none of them are going to be able to cover these fees. And so there's been widespread protest across the Reddit platform, including many subreddits, even going dark. Some moderators have even gone so far as to permanently shut down their subreddit. So this is like definitely a bummer, man. You know, and like I don't know. I think the change is supposed to come into play on July 1st. So that's gonna feel like reverberations to the site, probably losing a good chunk of its user base. I don't know how many people use mobile, but like the mobile versions of the site. And, you know, as one of the mods for a subreddit, you know, I've been trying to read up on the changes and gauge their impact. But, you know, to be honest, I haven't had the time to formulate like an educated response or a strategy moving forward just yet. I know, I'm going to have some kind of response, I guess, but I'll be sure to keep you up to date. And if you have an opinion you'd like me to know or, you know, on the matter, just, you know, feel free to reach out and you will definitely be heard 100%. But, you know, one of the things that really bumps me out about this whole Reddit situation is that up until now, this has been a great resource for news headlines like the one I'm about to share. And I'll include a link to this in the show notes. But so a month ago, there was a news headline about how the entire board of the academic journal NeuroImage resigned all at once. They all walked out over the actions of their academic publisher, whose profit margins they said outstripped even Google and Amazon, which is crazy. It sounds like they were pissed and they felt like it was unnecessary. And I mean, probably they felt it was downright greedy, but I don't know enough to really comment. I'm just reporting what happened. It's interesting to read about. This is a tricky situation for sure. I'm definitely gonna have to find a guest to come on and talk about like the current landscape of academic publishing, because this is integral to the field of medical illustration. So if you are, or if you know someone who is a particularly qualified candidate to talk about the history and the status quo of academic publishing and how it impacts the work of medical and scientific illustrators, please do reach out. That's going to be it for this episode. I know I've said this for like the last three solo episodes in a row, but I have several interviews recorded and I'm waiting through the edits there. I apologize for the wait, but believe me, when I say these are going to be worth it, all right, you guys are going to love these. You're really going to enjoy this, these next few interviews coming out. So in the meantime, let me know if you want to hear more of these current event style episodes. You can also leave a comment wherever you heard this podcast or shoot me a message on social media or an email. I'm not hard to find. So until next time, stay safe out there, folks. Keep at your craft, and I hope you're having a great summer. All right, peace out.